Shall we talk about a film?
Yes, please. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast! Thanks.
How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. I'm back from a very long break. I spent some time with some family. I got work tomorrow. It's gonna be interesting. I left, everything was on fire.
Yeah.
And I think nothing's changed.
Okay.
So I know we're going into the busiest month of the year. And I know that there was lots to do left over from last year.
Yeah.
So I'm a little on edge, but I'm excited. I'm eager. I'm sort of going into this new year. I've decided I'm gonna change my attitude around money.
Okay.
I'm now money sober, and £1 is too much.
Oh, I like that.
That's really nice. The only I think if I'm trying to manage money,
yeah,
a bit like alcohol,
yeah,
I've proven I can't. So I just have to be money sober,
yeah,
and be like, "Ooh, am I going to get an extra thing of squash? No, because £1 is too much."
Yeah,
and just see how that goes.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you, man? How are you doing?
I've got a screaming migraine, like the worst. I'm burnt out to fuck because over Christmas I've had like 3 days off over the Christmas bit, which has been lovely to spend time with the family and stuff.
But for 3 days, it's not a lot.
It's just long stretches of the busiest time because in the gooch between Christmas and New Year's,
Avatar
came out before Christmas,
right?
And
great
it was
film,
fucking silly, yeah. Great film,
yeah.
Silly busy,
yeah.
And then the gooch between Christmas and New Year's, the grey days, no one wants to be around their family anymore. So everyone is like, we're all going to go and spend £60 on tickets where we have to legally shut the fuck up because I don't want to speak to any of you cunts anymore. And every single family went through the same thing, and you could tell who was like teetering on the edge of like a knife crime. When they were getting to the till, do you know what I mean? Because you'd be like, how you doing? What are you watching? Blah, blah. I just need to get away from my wife. And it's like, whoa, buddy. Someone needs the office.
And did any of them watch Buffalo 66?
None,
but we did.
We did. And Buffalo 66 is one of those films that you sort of catch every now and then. And you're like, oh, I'll just give this a go.
I'm going to be honest. I had completely slept on this film. It was one of those films I'd seen posters for.
100%.
In cool video shops.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I'd go into like a cool DVD shop.
Yeah.
That also sold records and some skate t-shirts.
100%.
And they'd have a Buffalo 66 poster and I'd go, ha ha, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I have now.
Good.
Sort of.
Okay. Yeah.
Complex.
I think that's where you need to be though. This is what the film is. I'm going to, I've planned out a whole show.
Should we talk about what we're going to get into?
We're going to get into what is Buffalo 66.
We're going to get into trying in some way to sum up what Buffalo 66 is, yeah.
We're going to get into what makes this film unconventional compared to other romantic dramas. It might sound like a mystery, but once you've seen it,
it's really not.
It's not.
It's not.
It's not.
We're going to try and, I mean, it's ridiculous. Why is this film so polarizing is the title of what we're going to get into. But
polarizing
again,
today.
Once you've seen it.
Yes. But we're looking at it through the lens of 2025. You've got to remember this is 1998.
Even for 1998.
Even for 1998, it's rough.
Yes.
It's rough. But through the lens of 2025, I'm going to get
rougher.
It's arguably rougher.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's aged poorly. I think it's aged controversially.
It's a fascinating film, and I cannot wait to talk about it.
It is.
And at the end, get into...
Just what's it really mean?
What does it really mean?
What does it really mean? So, listen, don't give me a big insider, in-depth thing of this. Just give me first watch through, initial reaction, how were you feeling? Did it hit you right? Did it leave you warm?
Did hit me right? Did it leave me warm? It was a brilliant watch, but for reasons that I'll get into later, my enjoyment of the film wasn't the thing that made it brilliant.
Yes.
What makes it brilliant are the questions it left me about my own feeling on the world.
Yes.
There was lots that I violently disliked about this film, and it was interesting to be put in a position where I wasn't quite sure why.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is if you look at a film like American History X,
sure,
some awful, horrible language used in that film, some awful, horrible things happen within the first 10 minutes.
The first 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
The film is very clear
about
how you should feel about what's being depicted.
Well, I mean, yeah, so there, you there's know, no like studio laugh track under the bite the curb.
Scene, right, you know exactly. I mean? Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not being ambiguous
no.
about how you should feel about
very
what
clear cut, very direct. Clear cut.
This is something awful happening, and we as filmmakers also feel that this is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo 66 is none of that.
Nope.
Some really ambiguous, complex, awful stuff happens.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's sincere. I don't know if it's a condemnation. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing for a film to do.
How nice is that taste
right.
that's left in your mouth? Though, where you're exactly.
The taste of mystery.
This is what?
And I've not even had to roofie anyone's drink to get it.
I mean, it's Happy New Year, I guess. What a way to kick off the first episode of January. I hope that ticks the numbers
up. I've had two weeks at home and I'm fucking feral.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. You need to get back to work. Sick of this.
What did you think? Because you've seen this before, right?
I've only seen it fairly recently.
Okay.
I went on a bit of like, I think it was mid last year. Buffalo 66 went on. Silver Linings Playbook. Mentals were a sort of a little bit floppy, a little bit flimsy. So I was kind of like, I just want to make myself sad.
Okay.
I saw a short of someone being sort of like, Buffalo 66 slaps.
Right.
Buffalo 66 is one of the best films I've ever seen. And I was like, it's going on the watch list. It's fine. I was having a sad one. I put it on. And by the end of it, I was like, I don't think I trust that person. I don't think I could.
It's not one of the best films ever made. It's one of the more interesting, though.
It's one of the most interesting indie movies I've ever seen, and I fully understand why it became a massive cult classic.
Yes.
And I understand why it aged the way it has.
Totally. Totally, totally, totally.
The thing that it brings up for me is, what is Buffalo 66? All right, so Buffalo 66, it's an indie, it's low budget, it's a romantic drama from 1998. Right.
Yeah. Shall I briefly tell people who haven't seen it what the sort of back of the DVD blurb is?
Sum it up in two sentences if you can.
A recently released convict who served his sentence has lied to his parents about being a very successful man.
Yes.
And through an argument he has with his mother on the phone, is backed into a corner where he has to turn up to his parents' house with a new wife.
Yeah.
And panicking, kidnaps a young girl who he then takes to dinner, and for some inexplicable reason she just becomes quite smitten with him, and the film then continues with him and her going about their day post kidnapping.
Well, it's whilst he's on a revenge mission to kill a football player who fucked up his life. A football player missed a field goal, which caused him to lose a 10 grand bet.
Which caused him to go to prison,
which
he's just gotten out of.
Yeah, so now he's on a mission to go and kill this American kill the football player and himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the director, right? Vincent Gallo.
Who plays Billy,
the recently released convict, and a very young Christina Ricci. Mm-hmm. Playing the kidnap girl Layla.
Yes.
Yes.
Gorgeous. I like that. That was good.
It's a film that from the back of the DVD you think you know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then none of the characters behave how anyone would in that scenario, and you're left confused and intrigued and all sorts of stuff.
I have thoughts on this.
Okay.
And I have sort of like little things where we're given an insight into Billy's psyche and how he feels the world should run.
He's very well painted.
Yeah.
And although he's incredibly abrasive, and at no point did I like him.
No, you're not supposed to.
You don't, and I also didn't understand him.
Yeah.
By the end of the film, you do understand him.
You understand him more.
Layla's a closed book. There's hints.
Layla's a different one. We're going to get into Layla in a little bit. But Buffalo 66 is a tough watch, right? It's gained cult status over the years for being brutal, but intriguing, raw, but unconventional. And fucking personally, I love this to how beautifully it is made.
Yeah,
it is ridiculous.
Stunning film.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, gorgeous, gorgeous movie.
It's deeply empathetic, like to a fault. And the
empathetic
way
with the wrong people.
Yes.
Or the uncomfortable people.
The
I should
uncomfortable
say.
People.
It's uncomfortable that the film is empathetic to the antagonists, not the not yes, the innocent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think there is an innocent. I think everyone has major flaws.
Yeah.
Their flaws sometimes work together. They sometimes don't.
Yeah.
Every character is a character study. Every character is so deeply upsetting to witness because of how relatable each character is written.
Yeah.
And how realistic they're all played.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Yeah.
Makes it a fucking great film. Makes it a great film. It offers this painstaking look into these flawed characters, unapologetically playing into their flaws. They don't try and get better. They don't try and fix their issues. They are their issues. It's like, have you ever seen Gummo?
No.
Gummo is unapologetic as fuck, and it's a horrible watch.
Right, okay.
But it's an amazing film.
Okay.
Amazing film.
It's, again, one of those ones in the right DVD shop.
Yeah.
I'll see a poster and I'll be like, oh yeah, that one.
I've got it on Blu-ray.
Okay.
4K.
Okay.
We're going to watch it. It's really uncomfortable.
Okay.
It's really uncomfortable.
Looking forward to it.
But Buffalo 66 is relatable in some aspects, and it's so far-fetched in others that it cannot help but speak to me on like a fundamental molecular level.
Right.
There's just something in it, and it's not a kind movie. It holds no punches. It doesn't care. It does not care about your feelings towards this.
No.
It's not trying to please you. It's not trying to put you on like a happy...
No one... The director's not trying to make you like anyone.
No.
You're not supposed to feel good by the end of it. It's yeah. Yeah. And it's not even by sort of, you know, we're making it sound like it's a Tarantino movie or it's a Cannibal Holocaust or there's really challenging visuals. There's nothing
it's just
challenging in the visuals at all. It's just an emotional...
Visually, it's gorgeous. It looks incredible.
Mm.
It looks like it's such a beautifully shot late 90s film that's almost reminiscent of the late 60s, early 70s. It gives me that French New Wave feel.
Yes.
You know, sort of almost Technicolor, everything pops, everything's like, ooh.
The only thing I knew about the film beforehand, and again, this was just because we do a film thing and so our phones just feed us film facts all the time. Yeah. Traditional film.
Yeah.
And I know this because I'm a photography nerd as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you expose the film for a brief second, it creates the negative, right?
Yeah,
which is where the dark areas will appear bright, the bright areas will appear dark.
Yeah.
The film stock that they use for this, Ektachrome, actually creates a positive.
It does.
Where you can't really change much after you've shot it.
Yeah.
So all the lighting has to be spot on in the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a beautiful film stock, and I think it's one of the main reasons this film looks as sumptuous as it does. It's like a real treat on the eyes.
Yeah.
Because every single sort of decision has to be made there and then. It takes on almost a kind of theatrical, when I say theatrical, I mean like a play.
Yeah, yeah.
The lighting is very much, it's not natural.
No.
Kind of naturalistic lighting. It's very much a presentation. And it takes on a sort of dreamlike quality because of it. There's very, very figurative. Shots aren't necessarily literal and sort of like documentary style. It's filmic in that sense.
Yes.
And it lends that sort of mythic quality to what you're seeing.
Yeah, 100%. I wholeheartedly agree. Do you want a little fact about the film stock that they used?
Oh, yeah, go on.
The same as what the NFL used to use for the little sort of
really
clips back in the 60s. It tracks with obviously being 1966 in Buffalo.
Oh. When
Billy Brown was born.
Oh, of course, because his parents are obsessed. Well, yeah, his mum's obsessed with Buffalo NFL
the Buffalo
team.
Bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one game that she missed was the day that she gave birth to Billy, and she hates it.
Yeah.
Which is mental. We're going to get into that in a moment because it's fucking brutal. This whole sort of like weird dome of semi-abuse?
I would say full abuse. It's not physical or verbal. I think
you're right.
I think emotional neglect is abuse.
And, I'll agree.
And in the same way that if a parent were to grow up with a crack cocaine addiction, that would be considered an abusive household. The degree 100%. To which his parents are checked out of his existence is 100% abusive.
Okay. It's not overt abuse. It's not physical abuse and it's not sort of like direct abuse. It's a very sort of slow...
His father snaps the neck of his new puppy because it pissed in the house.
His dad abused a dog.
Right. Okay.
I'm not denying that.
Okay. And you're saying that's not child abuse?
No, that is child abuse. I'm saying okay. It's not overt. I'm saying he didn't walk down the garden and snap the kid's neck.
Right, okay.
He didn't belt him around the face. So didn't lock him in a little cage.
You've got a strange...
No. I'm not defending it at all. It's horrible. No,
you're not defending it. Jesus Christ, I'm not putting you on fucking Epstein Island. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying I'm a fan. I'm not saying I'm a big fan.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Little.
You've got thoughts. You have some feedback for them.
It's this thing where it's not subtle, but it's somehow worse than slapping a kid in the face.
I feel like what you're doing is... And I mean this with love, and this is essentially just a joke, but...
Oh, this is going to be so... Go on, hit me with a debilitating little insight.
It feels like your reaction to abuse is kind of like a survivor's pride. That's not abuse. That's okay, not real.
No. I'm saying it's not overt abuse. It doesn't
count as real.
What I was about into is I think this is worse.
Right, okay.
Is what I was going to get into.
Because you were kind of like...
Survivor pride.
You were like, you know guys that wear t-shirts in snow? It's not cold.
Sure.
snapped his dog's neck in front of him. Yeah. It's not overt abuse, is it?
Not to him.
Lucky.
Not to him. I think it's worse than that. I think a slap around the face would have been easier than dealing with the shit that he deals with.
I 100% agree.
Is the point I was getting to.
Yeah.
Before you cut the fucking legs out from under me. They're not overtly abusive in the traditional sense, but they are wildly self-absorbed. They're cruel through indifference, and they have this weird performative edge to them.
Oh, 100%.
It's this odd, creepy mask of what they think...
A supportive family should look like,
and it is so far removed from anything that resembles even a sliver of love. It's terrifying.
Christina Ricci is sort of...
Is it Ricci or Richie? Because in my head...
I've heard both, and I just
Ricci.
Took a... I've heard both, and
my
I took
name
a gamble.
Christina Ricci.
I've heard both, I took a gamble.
I like Ricci better.
Ricci.
Ricci's better. Ricci sounds cuter.
Doesn't it?
Ricci.
Can you pass us that? I'll just do a little
reachy.
I'll do a little reachy. There you go, babe.
She's been kidnapped and she's been forced under duress of violence to appear like a loving wife. And within the first 3 minutes of the dad meeting her, he's like, I love you.
I love daddy's little girl.
Right.
Come
and it's
here
this,
and give me a kiss.
It's this bizarre sort of performance of a functional family based on... And getting it completely wrong.
Yeah.
Getting it completely wrong through inexperience of not knowing what affection looks like.
Is it that? Or is it his parents know that Billy is sat on the other side of the table witnessing all of this play out? Because at the dinner scene that you're talking about, every camera angle
is covered.
Gives you the POV of whoever is sitting in that
seat.
It's
a square table, yeah.
So we watch a lot of it from the mother's point of view. Where it's a conversation's happening and she's not engaged at all.
Yeah.
And you hear the football game gets a bit louder because that's all the attention. When it cuts to Billy, the football game is barely audible. But you get a direct look at this woman you've kidnapped and forced into pretending to be your wife, and you're desperately trying to control that situation. And your parents are offering all this love and support and this kind of like, I love you.
Very hollow.
This is great. Mm. This is great. And all he's sitting there thinking is, where the fuck was this?
Yeah.
And it feels like an intentional extra layer of torture on top of 100%. The abuse that he's always been having.
There's always that horrible thing when you have someone in your life who you are not getting on with on a spiritual level, and then you meet a stranger or a friend and they're lovely to him and you're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Sorry, what did I do wrong?
Right, yeah. It throws into relief the experience you're having with them to see how they are with others.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Fucking hell, that's just hit me with a couple scenarios where I wasn't quite ready to deal with. Anyway.
Bottling up!
His mother's obsession with this football thing and open resentment towards Billy, combined with his dad's emotional absence where he just does not fucking, he doesn't share his music with his son, which is heartbreaking.
Mm.
But he's readily able to go and sing an entire fucking... Sinatra tribute to this woman that he's met for
3 minutes.
Devastating. Fucking devastating. it's got to have created like a childhood where Billy learns that he's not worth attention and that love is conditional. And that, as a child, mm-hmm. because we see through flashbacks where Billy's allergic to chocolate
mm-hmm.
and his mom chooses to give him chocolate donuts and goes, ah, it's fine. You've probably just...
You've never been allergic.
It's just,
what do you mean?
One of these. And he's like, no, I'm deathly allergic. Mm. You had to take me to the emergency room because I was dying as a child.
Yeah.
Because you fed me the exact food you've just put in front of me. That, this whole scene,
mm-hmm.
it plays out like a sort of, it's like a, you know, in a sitcom,
mm-hmm.
you know, when there's two people that don't get on and it's almost played off for laughs, it's this bleak, horrific comedy, and the comic book kind of panel
mm-hmm.
memory frames that come in and out of focus is a great way to depict how serious the situation is to Billy and how much everyone else thinks it's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
It's genius filmmaking on a level I didn't expect from a $1.5 million indie movie.
What's interesting about the film for me is the number of moments of genius like that are nestled into a salad of moments that feel incredibly self-serving.
Oh, dude.
For the maker of the movie. So
the
lead star who is starring in a movie that he has written and
his
is also directing has decided to make himself a character who for no reason at all just has a massive dick.
You say for no reason at all. This whole movie is like semi-autobiographical.
Right.
He'll never say it's autobiographical.
Right.
But it's shot in his childhood home.
Yeah.
And it was, there was a documentary behind the scenes that was being made as he was making this.
Right.
And it never got finished because his parents in the film are almost like for like. They're exaggerated versions of his actual parents.
Okay.
And when you look at his childhood, the entire film is like, Jesus fucking Christ, buddy.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This film is almost masturbatory.
So that's it. I think it's that. There is a masturbatory element to
the
film. And like I'm fine in the dick department. I've always known.
It's such a strong way to start this sentence. I'm fine in the dick department.
No. So I was going to go on to say before you cut my legs out from under me and undercut my point.
Sorry.
God, trauma pride.
That's all right.
Second
snip you've had. Do you know what I mean?
I've always known that I'm no great shakes because most women...
I've always known I'm no great shakes.
Right, yeah.
Sure.
Most women have found a way to work into a conversation at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can be too big, you know, they can be too big, they can be uncomfortable, but yours is fine. And I've always gone, okay, so it's not massive.
What's happening? So, you've had 2 weeks off and you've come back a different man. What's happening?
It's called energy. I've got it back again, all right?
I like it.
Right.
Continue talking about your penis, please.
I'm talking about Vincent Gallo's penis. What I've never felt the need to do as a result of that is I've gone, okay, well, clearly it's fine.
Yeah.
If everyone you know who's seen it has gone, yeah, that's fine.
Right.
You know right, what it is. Right. You know it. Yeah, right. I've not then gone, if I ever make a film, do you know what I'm going to put in there?
Right.
How big my dick is.
Yeah, but do you know what else I'm betting you wouldn't do?
Right.
In your second feature.
Right.
You wouldn't put an unsimulated oral sex scene between you and Chloe Savini.
Oh, God.
Interesting.
What? That's not real.
Brown Bunny.
Oh, he did Brown Bunny.
It's his film. He's the lead. It's Chloe Savini in his film. That's Vincent Gallo.
Oh, he's that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's...
But I'm so glad you brought his dick into this because there's a whole... I've got a whole section on it for later.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It'll be fine.
It might only be on Patreon, which you can join, dear listener, for just £1.50, probably.
Just £1.50.
It's £1.50-ish.
Ish.
Depending it might be £2 if you're on
where
Apple.
You are, it depends where you are in the world and how you're buying it.
Yeah.
Because
just go to patreon.com, fuck your phone off, stop being weird.
Yeah. I agree. But no, there are parts of the film where you go, didn't need that. Didn't need that.
Right.
That's a thing that he as a person likes.
Yes.
That he's decided to throw in there.
I don't think he likes it.
Right. Okay.
I think this whole film, his entire life
yeah.
has been trying to prove that he's worthy. I'm going to tell you about Vincent Gallo. I'm going to have to dumb it down and I'm going to have to sum it up real fucking quick.
Because right.
his life is insane. It's insane. I had to stop researching Vincent Gallo to continue researching the film
right.
yesterday.
Okay.
I started doing this on Tuesday.
Wow.
His life's mental. It's amazing.
Right.
I don't know a thing about this man, but I know everything about him.
Can you tell me about him?
I can. He's insane.
Okay.
When he was 12.
Right.
Poor family. Dad super stingy on money. Not too dissimilar from the parents in this film.
Yep.
He goes out and gets a job. A couple hours before school, 5 hours after school. The age of 13, he's a coffee boy, like for local mafia.
Okay, yeah.
This isn't overselling. This is like a legitimate thing. You know Ray Liotta's character in Goodfellas?
I was literally about to say, I understand that reference.
Yes.
Because of Goodfellas.
So Ray Liotta in Goodfellas is what Vincent Gallo was doing when he was 13, which
right.
is fun because Vincent Gallo is in Goodfellas.
Right, okay.
As one of the gangsters.
Right.
It's a weird sort of like self-fulfilling thing. He moved to New York.
Mm-hmm.
He started doing improv one-man shows
right.
in public.
Right.
That he would invite people to and they were like art pieces.
Right.
He became really well known for this.
Just may I interject for a
100%.
Moment? I'd love to have been
mm-hmm.
in the Italian-American deli.
Yeah, I had the same
in
thing.
In the back.
My joke is a bagel shop,
right.
but that's fine.
Yeah. Bagel shop. Be like, hey, Vinny, what you up to later? Oh, I've actually got an interactive art piece that I'm going to be doing in the square. Mm. I'd love for you to come down. What the fuck?
You're the coffee boy for the mafia.
Right.
What you doing ballet for?
Right.
I can't do accents, mate. It's too like, early in the new year for this.
Like fucking Billy Elliot if it was redone in New York.
No, he used to do
I got
like...
to do my art, pa!
So, in my mind, he invented one-man flash mobs.
Right, okay. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was a bagel shop. People are in there. They're late for work. They're rushing. They're being like, get me my fucking egg and cheese. What is taking so long? And then some guy at the back is just breakdancing like... But picture this in black and white. Do you know what I mean? Popping and locking.
I'm going to be doing an art piece about my massive dick.
Yeah. So he's done this. He became proper artist. He's
right.
got artworks that are hanging next to big, big artists.
Right, okay.
He's been a model for Calvin Klein, Yves Saint Laurent. He's done billboards in Times Square. He's
right.
done huge ad campaigns. He was a professional motorbike racer. In
what?
Like top of his field, he was doing the big races.
Is all of this proven?
Yes.
Okay.
All of it is trackable. All of it is checkable.
Because if it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the sort of biography
yes.
a 14-year-old would
it's
make up for themselves.
It's the fucking Discord logs of an incel.
Right, exactly. It's exactly
this
that.
This is why I got lost in a fucking rabbit hole, because this is stupid. So all of this is going on. And then he was like an actor in a fucking film with Johnny Depp. He's done these, like, he's worked with massive directors.
Right.
He's been in great films. He's a mint actor. He was a musician with a self-released album and all this shit. He had a band in New York. They were fucking massively popular.
What?
He's got art in galleries all around the fucking world. He's a motorcycle rider. He's a fucking model. And then he decides to direct his own movie, and it's this, which is fucking phenomenal. This guy's life is insane. He was a fucking coffee boy. He was Ray Liotta in Goodfellas. And then he goes and does all of that shit. Then you look at this and you look at Buffalo 66 and you go, okay, so the neglectful parents, they're not overtly abusive. They're very sort of like, we don't give a fuck about mm-hmm. whether you're here or not. Your love is conditional. Prove yourself to us.
Yeah.
And then you look at his life and you go, I get it.
Right.
I get it. You've gone full other side of the
Foolproof,
spectrum where you're like, I have to be the best at every single thing that I do.
Right.
Which is great. And
so
then,
how sincere is the worldview of Billy?
Yeah.
Which is a very toxic, angry, insecure, vulnerable, incel adjacent dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're saying this is basically autobiographical, are we saying that...
Semi-autobiographical.
Okay. So my question is, am I watching, bringing it back to that American History X thing,
mm-hmm.
of like there's a fine line
there is a fine
between
line.
Watching something that's criticizing hateful behavior
mm-hmm.
and celebrating it.
It's not a celebration.
Right, okay. Because Buffalo 66 doesn't give you the answer. It just presents it and goes, feel how you want about this. And I was, my worry throughout all of it was whether or not that Vincent Gallo, the man and the writer and the director, was sympathizing with Billy.
And the star and the producer. And the
wrote the theme tune and sung the theme tune.
Everything.
Did the motorbike stunts and got the coffee.
And he got a fucking good coffee as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's that question that lingered over my whole viewing of, is this a celebration of what's being depicted by the director?
I don't believe so.
Right.
I think this is a recognition of some of the ugly, uncomfortable, unconventional things that happen in life and the way that people deal with them and the way that people can choose to deal with them.
Right.
And then what this film does is it takes all of that and it bundles it together and goes, here is an endlessly empathetic woman with zero agency other than the fact that she is being forced to deal with all of that. Not consensually.
Yeah, it's a kidnapped child.
It's a kidnapped 18-year-old, 17-year-old.
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 And looking younger.
It's bad. Anyway, she's deeply empathetic.
Mm.
And it's Billy's animated, over-the-top viewpoint of what would fix his situation.
Right.
It's not a definitive thing to say this would fix, this is the cure for it. It's not saying that at all. What it's saying is, for me personally, doesn't matter how far down the rabbit hole that you go. Doesn't matter how fucking deep into incel territory you go. And it doesn't matter how much you act on this awfulness that can exist in every single person. And it's not your fault that it exists. It's a product of an upbringing. It's the nature versus nurture. Are people born good? Are they born evil? Are they born this way? Is violence taught?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's that whole philosophical debate. And it gives an endlessly empathetic woman with zero consent and zero agency who is willing to be the person, not to offer an end, not to cure it all, not to be sort of like, I've got the solution for you, but to listen and offer a beginning.
Yeah. Her character is one of the hooks that this film got in me in a big way because none of the ways that she behaves are rational.
Yeah.
None of the ways that she behaves are relatable.
Yeah.
And she's a big part of the way in which this film excuses Billy, or at least superficially.
Yeah.
You begin to worry, oh, is this excusing this behavior? Is this championing Billy's behavior?
100%.
Because she is that listening figure.
Yeah.
And there is no reason given by the script or the director as to why she's doing that, why she's behaving irrationally.
Yeah.
It is just a kidnapped child being an unending source of empathy for bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never explained. That's never given a backstory. And it's a juicy question mark.
It is.
And the film works because of it. If it became a natural born killer situation where you kind of knew both of them,
100%.
I think the film would be lesser. But
it would.
But so much of the film is ignorant or deliberately ignorant or deliberately challenging. She doesn't behave rationally, so it ends up coming across like Quentin Tarantino's directed an episode of The Undateables. It's like watching
fucking hell.
It's like watching two heavily learning disabled people fall in love.
Right.
But directed by Quentin Tarantino.
You are dancing so close to some sort of line, and I'm not sure if I want to be here. I'm not going over it. Yeah, but I'm not sure I want to be here.
Blame the movie.
I'm not sure I want to be here. Vincent Gallo.
Don't blame it on the sunlight. Don't blame it on the good times.
It's sunshine for a start.
Blame it on the movie. That was my own song with its own lyrics that you didn't know and you corrected me anyway.
Yeah, I clicked at the end and I hated myself for it.
Good.
I hated you more for it.
Good.
So Vincent Gallo is a guy that holds grudges.
Okay, so I should watch my language.
This is why I'm treading so carefully. Because that guy's terrifying.
Right,
I put a film on last night called Shut In because he's in it. And I was like, I'll just see what else he's done, like when he's acting and not doing the whole like directing thing. He plays a child molester, and he's just immediately in character. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right, okay. Just comes in with a child on each hand.
No, he like comes in with a mate who has two kids.
And God.
His ex-missus is like, do not take my children. He fucks kids. And I'm like, I might turn this off. Yeah. I've got a horrible migraine. I might just turn this off.
Look, I understand. Okay, he's a grudge holder.
He's a grudge holder. He's the guy that told Roger Ebert to get colon cancer.
Yes.
Pre him getting cancer.
Yeah.
And then in a Howard Stern interview, joked that he gave Robert Ebert cancer. God. But it was funny because he went, but then I gave him a remission. And then it was just unfortunate that it came back.
Oh.
You see what I mean? This is why I don't know a thing about this guy, because I watch interviews with him and he's charming. He's funny. I feel like this might be satire. To a degree.
Maybe, yeah.
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 But then I'm also thinking in his history of like performance art and all this stuff. And I'm like, maybe this is all a big Vincent Gallo is Vincent Gallo. But the real Vincent Gallo is like a, hey.
I think it's easier to enjoy his movie if we think that.
If it is that,
And
yeah.
I do enjoy his movie.
Yeah.
Knowing the little that I do about him, I don't think it's...
Yeah, I don't think it's that, because Christina Ricci had some other stuff to say about it.
Oh, God, really?
She described this film as spending most of the shoot locked in a car with a lunatic. Raving lunatic, sorry.
Okay.
Because he was insane, and he was terrible. He was massively, massively, how do I put this nicely?
Abusive?
Cuntish.
Right, okay.
Is a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
So what he would do is he would restrict her meals. So
what?
One pizza a day.
What?
That was it. He would deliberately separate her from her mother on set and keep them separated.
Right.
So that she was emotionally isolated and physically isolated.
Mm-hmm.
He would snap. So he would describe the scene and do the whole director thing and then but be in character.
Did he ask her to spend time with him a lot?
No.
Okay.
You know, like how he's in character in the film and he's just sort of like fucking, everything is like,
do it this way.
Can you hold me for a second? Don't fucking touch me.
Yeah.
That was the directing for the film.
Right.
Of a 17-year-old Christina Ricci.
Ricci?
Ricci. It's odd. There's so many conflicting stories left, right, and center. His life is fucking gorgeous to look at. It's just a barrel of amazing stuff mixed in with horrible stuff.
Right.
Mixed in with the weirdest shit you've ever seen. I've got weird shit.
Kaleidoscope of country.
It's a kaleidoscope of country and wonder. I love it completely.
Yep.
I love it completely. And I've got respect for the guy. I have questions about the guy.
Right.
I have... It's an arm's length wonder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a, oh, what's that over there? I might stay back though.
My thing is as a man who... was head over heels in love with Marilyn Manson as a young lad and thought it's satire, it's a character, it's so revealing
the
ways in which he's being problematic to highlight the hypocrisy of the society he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out to be, oh, isn't it always the ones you most suspect?
Yeah.
I might keep Vincent Gallo at arm's length.
100%.
Because I'm pretty sure it's just always the ones you most suspect. And I believe Christina Ricci over Vincent Gallo any day.
Okay, yeah, fair. I mean, I would too.
Right?
It's fucking Christina Ricci. Right. You know what I mean?
Come on.
Yeah. Why is this so polarizing today?
Okay, you're going to have to ask that question differently, because the answer... Right. The
why is this so polarizing today?
Go back to the square and do your interpretive dances.
Stop breakdancing in my deli.
The reason I don't understand...
Is that what you meant? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason I don't understand the question is to ask why this film is polarizing today is just a list of everything that happens in the film.
Right, okay.
Okay. All right. So I'm like, well, we've seen the movie. He kidnaps a child and forces her to... And she then falls for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Ta-da!
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. The main reason I wrote it this way is because essentially, I'm going to show you my notes. This is what I've written. It's essentially just a fucking essay.
Oh my God, that's 8 pages.
Yeah. Right, it's a massive essay, and I just needed something leading so that I could get to my point.
Great. The true nature of conversation.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
I'm sorry, you've done something now.
Right.
My go.
I'm listening just long enough to see when I can start talking.
Reachy. I think all of the polarization comes from the treatment of the characters. The ambiguous morality.
Yes.
There's no clear cut. This is a good guy. This is a bad guy. No. This is good. This is bad. No character is good. No character is bad. Everyone has questionable morals. No one is in it for the right reasons.
No.
There is just a cloud of weird nonsense
that
hangs over this film.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Okay.
I think the reason is so... Left leg. Right leg. No, right my leg. Right knee's weird. Okay. Left knee.
Left leg. A sailor went to sea, left knee.
What does that mean?
One person got that, and I'm happy they did.
Was it a poet who wrote a poem?
No, it's the little clappy hand game.
What?
The little clappy hand game.
Oh, where a sailor?
A sailor.
Reachy. A sailor went to CCC to see what he could CCC,
and all that he could CCC was the bottom of the deep blue CCC.
I didn't know the second verse.
And then you add knee, you see, and you have to slap your knees when you do it.
What?
A sailor went to see Nini.
That's not real.
It is real, my sister.
See Nini.
So you also have to throw in chop, which you karate chop
Fuck
your hand.
Off.
Yeah. This is a Cini game.
Chop.
So a sailor went
it
to
seems vaguely
so
racist.
A sailor went to sea. When you say sea, you salute.
Right.
And then when you say chop, you karate chop your hands like you're chopping wood.
Right.
And then when you say knee, you tap your knees. And eventually it gets to a sailor went to see chop knee to see what he could see chop knee, or whilst doing the slappy hands, and it's complicated. My sister and I used to do it when she was growing up, and it's a warm memory of mine.
Yeah. I feel like children saying that fast. See chop knee, see chop knee, see chop knee, singing it really loud in the middle of the street. It's vague. It's borderline on something.
You're gonna go out on a limb here.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna go out my left knee,
chop knee,
to see what I can see.
Yeah, great.
And I'm gonna say that this film is polarizing today because of how it begins.
Right.
Billy Brown just needs a piss. Just needs a piss. If the cafe, if the restaurant, if the prison, if any person had let him take a piss, I feel like most of this could have been avoided.
I don't feel the film would have happened.
It wouldn't.
Essentially.
This is what I'm saying. Isn't that the weirdest Lynchian setup for a movie you've ever been? You're introduced into this universe where every bit of this entire story is kicked off by someone needing to take a piss and struggling to find somewhere to do it.
I see it, and this is the way I see it, is that if I'm Vincent Gallo and I'm a weird fucking guy, and I want to write...
What you're fucking... I don't think that at all.
Okay.
He gave Robert Ebert cancer. Do you want cancer? Let's not.
Okay.
Take it back. Tell him that you love him.
I was making this point with someone the other day. Crystal witches.
Yeah.
And they talk
I know
about,
them well.
Don't you just... And like this rose quartz is good for your headache and this, that, and the other.
Oh, you're having a panic attack? Right. Take an onyx egg.
And my thought was, if crystals had magic powers, and I've answered my own question in the course of this conversation, I was like, where are the crystals with the bad effects? Where's the one where it's like, oh, slate causes poverty?
That's it.
This crystal gives you a fungal nail infection. Because I'm like, well, if they've got powers, why are they all universally positive powers?
Even God give kids bone cancer.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
But then you've hit the nail on the head.
I have.
There are crystals that have got bad effects. They're called uranium and polonium.
Yeah, of course.
So that
they
kind of...
They do give you bone
they
cancer.
They do give you bone cancer.
Ah.
Anyway.
Buffalo 66 is really sending us down that. We're getting into like... The sciences, we get into philosophy.
It's a broad church.
You've made one poet laugh at some point.
Right. My sister's going to love to be called a poet.
I think your sister's a poet.
Yeah.
Does she know it?
No, she doesn't. That's the
problem. Oh, that's the best kind of poet.
That's the best kind of poet.
The poet that doesn't know she is one.
Right, exactly.
Amazing.
No, so the whole film starts because he needs a piss.
Mm.
The fundamental fact of the matter is, I think the whole intro where he's running around desperately trying to find somewhere to piss.
Yeah.
Is for our benefit.
Oh, 100%.
And I'll tell you for why now, right?
Sure.
A million and one things happen for very mundane reasons.
Yeah.
So if you write a film and you go, right, a convict steals a young ballet dancer, how did they meet? And he's like, oh, well, he just needed a piss and he went in there. As viewers, we would go, that's incredibly unlikely.
Yeah, 100%.
But the life is made of unlikely events.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Like, we became friends because of unlikely events.
Yeah, you approached me and said, a fellow Japanophile, and I fucking hated you.
Yeah, exactly.
because you were dressed as a magician and called me a Japanophile.
But you wouldn't start a film with that line, would you?
Because people I might, because I'm going to make three. That's a scene right there. I'm going to call it Best Friends. Ah, fellow Japanophile, fuck you. And then it's just going to be 18 years of like cocaine abuse and hookah lounges.
And then five of rank sobriety.
Yeah, five of sobriety where they start talking about their mental health and crying at the deer hunter. Yeah, sick.
So I think that whole opening is, it humanizes him as a character.
It does.
But it also justifies the randomness that is perfectly acceptable in our own lives that we 100%. Won't accept when we see it in a movie.
Definitely.
Because when you see it in a movie, you go, that's contrived.
But it's the immediate morality questionnaires, though. So it immediately has you on the back foot, because if that was me, I would piss anywhere.
Yes.
I've just come out of prison. Mm. I would piss myself.
Yes.
I wouldn't give a shit. It's almost like he's too polite to piss in the street.
He's incredibly repressed.
And yeah. It's that thing of like, okay, so this is where I am with this character. But then the movie delivers no clear judgment on Billy's behavior. It leaves us to decide whether we're like, whether he's sympathetic, whether he's pathetic, whether he's despicable, or whether he's all of the above.
Yes, he's all of the above.
And he is.
Yeah.
But the film doesn't fucking set you up that way.
No.
And then by the end of it, you're like, I'm kind of happy that they're in love.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that they're in love because all the other alternatives were worse.
Yeah,
because
he was going to kill a stranger and then himself in a strip club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This film's fucking mint. It's so simple and so straightforward, but so dark and fucking horrible at the same time.
It operates in the zone between mid-90s David Lynch and later day Tarantino. It's like if you were going to do the spectrum of directors, Tarantino and Lynch, you'd find Gallo somewhere
what a
in
fucking
between them.
Place to be on that
what
spectrum.
What a great place what to be.
For your first feature?
Yeah.
What a fucking place to be.
Yeah, 100%.
Great movie. This has gone on for a while. And I could talk about this film all day. I could talk about Vincent Gallo even longer. And I'm going to. Because when we finish up with this show, we're going to do a bit that's exclusive for Patreon.
Yeah.
And I've got a nugget of stuff here
that
is going to blow your mind. Because I've mentioned it in title. And I specifically said, do not go near this fucking website.
Okay.
Because I need you to read it out for the first time ever to me, who has read it multiple times.
Okay.
It's ridiculous.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
It's ridiculous. But before we do that, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to get to what it really means.
Right.
I'm just going to scroll to the bottom of my 8 pages of essay. For me, and this is entirely personal, because whoever is watching this film, dear listener, you're going to get something from it. And whether it's good, bad, positive, negative, all of it is correct. None of it is correct. All of it is exactly the right thing to be thinking and feeling, but I guarantee it will be something different in a year. It's one of those films that is just a blank slate. It's art in its purest form, where it leaves you reflecting upon yourself at the current moment that you're in. And that, for me, is fucking gorgeous. But the meaning behind it all that I'm taking away right now is hurt people don't need punishment. They don't need to be punished. It's not a sort of blanket treatment for all. It's understanding. And it's understanding why people are the way they are. And if you have the ability to do that, welcome to.
Yeah.
Love's not grand.
No.
Nor dramatic. It's quiet. It's awkward. And it's patient. Redemption begins at the moment someone feels worth saving. My redemption, going sober, gaining some self-respect, spending my last 2 years working on the shit, realizing that I'm worth something to myself, not to anyone else. And that's where my self-worth comes from. Still struggling with it. Still fucking wobbling with it. On the daily.
But doing good, bud.
But getting there.
Yeah.
Bit by bit. This film's about how cruelty is learned, how gentleness, doesn't matter how big or how grandiose or how fragile or how gentle, can be the biggest act of rebellion.
Yes.
And if that isn't punk,
that's
I don't
incredible.
Know what the fuck is.
All right, Superman.
I'm on it, mate. I am a punk rocker. Yes, I am.
I think it's the most I've enjoyed the work of a child abuser since Michael Jackson.
Okay, Michael Jackson, you can fuck right off because I've been reading loads about this recently as well. Okay. There's a film out this year that I'm excited for called Michael.
Right.
Michael's bodyguard has been doing the rounds on social media because everyone's circulating that fucking picture of Michael with Epstein.
Right.
And they're like, see, told you. And the bodyguard is like, I was his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
Michael was buying a house.
Right.
Epstein was selling his house.
Regardless of the excursion to Epstein
Absolutely
Island.
Absolutely not. I'm on this.
Okay.
He didn't go to Epstein Island. Right. Epstein wanted a photo of him and Michael was polite.
I think all of your takeaways for Buffalo 66 are half of the story.
Okay.
And what makes me love the film as much as I do is all the stuff in it that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can certainly take away what you took.
Mm-hmm.
You can also watch a film that is controversial in who it asks you to sympathize with.
Definitely.
And controversial with what it then tells you those people deserve.
Yeah.
And I don't think it gives a definitive answer that hurt people deserve understanding.
I didn't say deserve.
Sorry, yeah. Okay, you said...
Need.
No,
I don't say deserve.
Right.
Everyone deserves
There is
shit.
A lot of stuff in there that doesn't sit right with me.
100%.
I don't know if I trust the writer, director, motorcyclist, and coffee boy, Vincent Gallo, to be on the side of the angels.
Yeah.
But if I did trust that he was, I wouldn't give a shit about this film.
Yes.
It's interesting because of its knife edge
100%.
Politics.
This is a deeply flawed human making a deeply flawed...
set of decisions.
A beautiful film about deeply flawed characters.
Being rewarded. And that's...
to an extent.
Yeah, but
makes exploring.
Right.
Makes exploring.
Exactly. Fascinating film. Shall we rate it? Shall we just rate it now?
Yeah, go for it. What are you doing?
Fat 10.
Fucking fat 10.
Fat 10. And I wasn't expecting it. And it's not an endorsement of what's depicted.
100% no.
It's not an endorsement of some of the things the film might say. But as a thing to watch...
as a piece of cinema... as a study piece, as a thing.
I will
piece.
Be watching this, and every time I watch it, I'll get something new out of it.
1,000.
And for somebody who rewatches far more films and watches new ones,
yeah.
What a gem to have in the collection.
100%.
Love it.
In the bank. Chuck it
Love
in the bank.
Love it.
Shall we do some comment corner before we wrap this up?
Very briefly.
Let's do
Very,
this one.
Very briefly. Let me just dig into my little...
I was going to do a game. It was a Vincent Gallo true or false, but to be honest, I'd rather do comment corner because we've had two that have... gone for me specifically. And I want my chance. I want to go Billy Brown on it.
Well, somebody got in touch.
Yeah.
Talking about your love of
Begonia.
Yeah. Right? This is Dan McConley.
Yeah.
And you just said, look, you know, it's a well put together film. I don't think another director could have put this film together in this way and done it as artfully.
Only Lanthimos could have done Begonia the way that Begonia has been done.
Right.
And I'll die on that hill.
And it was important to them, and they just went, dumbest take I've heard in years.
I'm glad you brought this one up, Rob, because I'm totally not prepared for this one, but I have stalked this guy to no end. And it might be the dumbest take that you've heard in the last couple of years, but the dumbest take that I've heard in the last 2 years is self-publishing books on Amazon Kindle about Eastern European cinema, and it's a poorly written essay about a director... which objectively is one of the greatest directors of all time in the history of cinema. But your 30-page ebook.
Don't be mean.
On why you like it.
Let people
might
try
be the dumbest
things.
Take for me. I'm not saying that this is good or bad. I'm not saying
right,
it's good
Vincent
or bad.
Gallo.
I'm just
right.
saying.
I'm going to leap to the defense of your critic here.
Have you downloaded a fucking Kindle book? Have you?
I've not.
Tarkovsky.
I've not. I'm going to say that success in your hobby.
Yeah.
Does not determine your right
no, of course
to have
not.
An opinion.
Yeah, of course not.
And
have your opinions.
We've got a little podcast and we say bold shit all the time.
You say bold shit today.
Right.
Don't drag me into this
right.
shit.
We say bold shit all the time. And, you know, the podcast could be, we're not last podcast on the left.
We never will be.
We never
guys,
will
they're
be.
Too good.
They're
Henry Zebrowski, he's a different breed.
All right.
He's built different.
Right. He's fine.
Built different.
Okay, you're a fan. And that's a lovely thing. But it, your voice isn't less valid because your podcast isn't that big.
My voice is less valid because it's not Henry Zebrowski's voice. I don't
have a lovely one here from Go Adam One.
Okay.
Talking about House of Dynamite.
Okay.
Because I love the film.
oh, this is the one that the way you said, oh, I like this film, and everyone's like, yeah, that's great. Whereas well, I'm like a film, and they're like, yeah, you're a cunt.
No, because the thing is the vast majority of people agree that Begonia is one of the best films of the year. When you said as much, people were like, dumbest take I've heard in years.
See what I mean?
I picked a film that most people have roundly said is awful.
Yeah, you defended it, and everyone's like, oh, let me touch it. Let me touch the tip.
Yeah.
Some are too big. This is perfect.
Because I'm the favourite. It's because I'm the favourite. But Go Adam One got in touch and said, and this is a good point, it was good, not great. I can't stand how millennials have only 1-star and 5-star buckets. It's worse with Gen Z because movies are just deltas for identity tribes. How about pretty good, doubt I will watch it again. You should watch it if you like the genre. Which
that's actually weirdly poignant, man. I get sick of sort of, obviously I work in a cinema.
Yep.
I have discussions with people about movies. Every day,
mm-hmm.
every single day, and it's today. I was talking to someone about Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like Twilight, and that's fine.
Fair,
but I was like, objectively, it's a terribly made film that is fucking incredible if you're watching it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
nothing, and that's completely fine.
Right,
but it is. It's either a complete go mm-hmm. or a complete stop.
Such binary.
There's
right.
There's no second gear, third gear, fourth gear. There's none of that.
So I mentioned that we celebrate eights on the show.
We do.
Which
not
is,
today.
Not today.
Not today.
Fat tens all around.
Fat tens.
But Go Adam One got in touch and said, I listened to you, in fact, my only movie podcast, exactly because of your viewpoint being that way.
Oh,
and
that's
so
really sweet.
Adam, we're assuming Adam, it's not. It's G.
Go Adam One.
It could be. Could be Godam One. It's a big
Reachy.
World. Reachy. But thanks for tuning in, Bud. We love you too. And we're out of time.
Yeah. But you can get more from our self-published Amazon Kindle book. It's 28 pages long.
No. You can get
I'm joking.
More. You can get more.
I'm joking.
By going to Patreon, because we're going to carry on chatting for a little bit. It's a quid. It's a quid 50.
It is.
It's maybe £2.
The Amazon ebook is £7. It's not. I'm joking.
I'm
we don't have
now.
One. Not yet.
How much is?
I don't have a Kindle. Who has Kindles?
I've got a Kindle.
You've got books. Just read a book.
They're heavy.
But they're on my shelf. And
that's far away.
It's too reachy.
And I don't want to buy Friction Fiction in hard copy and have
Why?
It on my shelf.
Friction Fiction.
Yeah.
No one buys that in physical media, do they?
Exactly. You buy it in Kindle.
Stop it. Do you read smut?
Occasionally.
Shut the fuck up.
What?
No, you don't. No, you don't.
I've been known to.
Have you got like books on like werewolves and shit?
No, God, no.
He I caressed me under the moonlight as he transformed.
Ah, woo!
Take me, I said. Listen, princess. Daddy's transforming.
You really hurt Daddy's feelings when you say he's nearly 30.
You hurt Daddy's feelings when you hit my Twilby. My fedora. Not a Twilby. Do you actually read smut?
Occasionally. It's not like
what sort of smut? This is Patreon. This is the Patreon. Fuck what I was going to do. This
yeah,
is it.
Yeah. Let's get
guys,
to that.
Guys, thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. I desperately have to leave because this is amazing. I've just hit gold. If you want to come mine some gold with me, Patreon for a quid. Love you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
We
See
are now
going to
wrap up the full episode. But Ben's going to sum up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of Buffalo 66 into a concise, easy, simple, morally uncomplex.
Oh, I'll try it again. I'll pull something else out.
Morally uncomplex way of looking at Buffalo 66 and turning it into a Monday motivational pep talk.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to consume.
Vincent Gallo made Buffalo 66, which is arguably one of the most controversial movies today that was made in 1998 and was controversial back then. It's just aged controversially. He made this as his first feature. His second feature had unsimulated oral sex from Chloe Savini. He was a fucking... He rode bikes professionally. He's an artist. He's a model. He's a fucking... Literally, you could do anything. Like, this guy's life is literally like a choose-your-own-adventure, and everything is yes.